Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest, too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by Sun First Solar, known for delivering solar excellence since 1984 and recently voted best solar company in Marin County. We're also brought to you by Terzo, an authentic upscale European neighborhood restaurant in the heart of Cow Hollow in San Francisco. Today's guest is John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle in part two of our conversation. Well, John, for part two of our podcast this week, you touched on the outfield situation in part one the other day, and it really is, it's going to be tricky for the Giants because, I mean, okay, Hunter Pence is definitely out there in right field, and, you know, he's going to get his power going, it looks like, with that home run that he hit on Monday, and the other outfield spots are really kind of iffy here because center field, who knows how many games Denard Span is going to play this year. He's on the DL right now. They're playing all different guys out there. I mean, Brandon Belt is sometimes in left, sometimes at first base. You know, Drew Stubbs, who hasn't really proven himself to be a great major league hitter. Same thing with Gorkys Hernandez. I mean, how much does Michael Morse play out there? I mean, it's just, it's kind of a, you know, a, I don't know, musical chairs maybe as to who's going to be out in the outfield, which is not a great situation if you're going to be a contending team. Do you think the Giants are going to try to make a move at some point in May or June? I mean, what do you think the overall big picture plan is for this outfield?
Well, I think they would have to. I think that's really the next step. I think they must be, as we speak, telling their scouts to find out who's available, at what price, who's hot, who's not, whose contract is up, all that stuff, because I don't think they can play the full season with this outfield as is. We don't know about Span's health for the long term. Jared Parker is going to miss much of the season. They were kind of banking on him to add a little pop, and you know he got off to a bad start, then he got hurt. Gorkys Hernandez, they were thinking Gregor Blanco, the guy who could play all three spots, spot start, defensive replacement late, just don't see it quite yet. Michael Morse, not really an outfielder. Stubbs, I don't know how much he's going to deliver offensively. He's good on defense, but they need someone to hit. It really comes down to Hunter Pence. I mean, the better he does, the less pressure on this offense, on the outfield to carry the weight. I mean, they can't have one guy. But if Pinto doesn't hit, then they'll have no guy. You know, unless they put Brandon Belt in left field a little bit more permanently, and, you know, the defense won't be quite as good, but they're going to have to sacrifice something because the offense just has not done it. You know, they started April with a victory at Dodger Stadium in the opener of the series, and it's certainly a great change from April for them. But that's really the weak link. You know, we were talking coming into the season, well, what are they going to do in left field? Well, what are they going to do in the bullpen beyond Melanson? And those are the two issues that kind of have bitten them. I mean, they've had injuries. They've had players who haven't produced. They've had guys who just can't hit the long ball. But those are the key issues that maybe they could have addressed a lot more in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, Will Smith going down certainly hurt them in the bullpen. But it looks like Steven Okert can maybe take over that, you know, left-handed spot. As far as the pitching goes, though, there's that residual effect of Madison Bumgarner being out. And I think maybe that gets lost a little bit in it, John, because, I mean, you look at him and you think, okay, every fifth day, and, you know, we could pretty much count on trying to win those games, even though they didn't early on with him. But I look at residual effect. I mean, especially that game last weekend, when you look at the Saturday 8-run inning, that just wouldn't have happened. I mean, they had Stratton out there when he wouldn't even be on the team if Bumgarner was healthy. Ramirez, when they end up DFAing, I mean, designated for assignment because, you know, he really had a horrible time of it. And I just,
about
I say,
20 minutes after the last, after his game. Right?
Yeah, he was gone. But I see Ty Block, you know, do well as a starter, and that's great. But he would have been your handy dandy relief pitcher in a game like that. You wouldn't have had an 8-run mm-hmm. inning. I see this residual effect. Do you see that? And, you know, we know now that Bumgarner is going to be out until at least the All-Star break. So it's a long period of time that you have to be adjusted for this.
and everybody moves up a notch. How great was it to have Cueto as your number two guy? He's been an ace on most clubs.
Yeah.
But now Samardzija has to move up. Who is number two now? If Cueto's one, I mean, I guess you could say Matt Cain. He's been the best pitcher so far, most consistent this year, believe it or not. But Samardzija, his ERA is high. Moore, his ERA is high. Ty Block, he's just starting off. We don't know the long-term effects of, you know, how he'll handle the rotation. I mean, he's been great as a starter, as a Giant, but, you know, we haven't even seen him in a handful of starts yet. And it's people are going to have to step up, that whole cliche. Well, you know, one man down, the next guy is up. But it's a bummer for them, because that has always been the strength of these championship teams, the starting pitching and going deep enough not to put pressure on that bullpen and not to put pressure on the offense. They have to score a bunch of runs. And that's how they consistently won in October. But you just don't see it with this rotation, with Bumgarner out. What a loss. And, I mean, you could look at the Dodgers and Kershaw. Remember, Kershaw missed so much of the season last year, a couple months. And they played their best baseball without him.
They did.
And that was the epitome of a team stepping up without their best player. And they really did it. It's like, well, now that he is back, now they're even better than they were, because they obviously believed in themselves without Kershaw. And, you know, they sprinted to the finish line and beat the Giants, who had the first half record, if you remember. And then they just struggled in the second half and all the way through April. So the Giants really haven't played good ball since before the All-Star break in 2016. That's what we're looking at.
We'll have more with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle right after this. Remember that old Abbott and Costello baseball routine? Who's on first? What's on second? I don't know who's on third? Well, actually, when talking about third, I do know that terzo means third in Italian, as in a third place to gather and share food and wine. That would be for your third meal of the day. Yes, dinner. And it should be your first choice when you're looking for an authentic, upscale European neighborhood restaurant. Located in the heart of Cal Hollow, Terzo is a beautiful combination of modern and cozy. Terzo's food is inspired by the coastal regions around the Mediterranean Sea, sourced from their bountiful local farms and ranches. The eclectic and diverse wine list is attractively priced, draws from regions all over the world, and is designed to pair perfectly with the cuisine. Terzo, 3011 Steiner at Union Street in San Francisco. I think we always have to be reminded of the fact that you could have great arms, but you don't have to have everybody throwing 95, 97 miles an hour to be successful. And the reason I say that is, when I was watching Ty Block in his last start, I mean, it reminded me of a young Jamie Moyer, not the old Jamie Moyer, but a younger one who could change speeds the way he does. And he could throw 91, 92. You know, he's not throwing 97, but he throws hard enough in that changeup, just the differential. And you're seeing it now with Matt Cain, too, throwing the two-seamer instead of the four-seamer. You know, it has more of that downward movement. So if you can move the ball, change speeds, it's amazing how much success you can have. Everybody always has to be reminded, oh, remember Greg Maddux or remember Tom Glavine? Well, there could be a lot of guys like that. It just doesn't get talked about. It's more about, oh, does this guy throw 97 or 98? And it's funny, because it just kind of gets lost, the art of pitching. And I think Ty Block was just kind of reminding everybody of that the other day.
No, that's a good call. And maybe Jamie Moyer, Tom Glavine, maybe more recent times, well, Kirk Reeder isn't.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me of Kirk Reeder a little bit, yeah.
But maybe Barry Zito in Oakland before he came to San Francisco, how good he was without 95, 97. You know, a left-hander who can spot and who can trust his stuff and, you know, work the zone and keep you off balance. And that's what Block is. It's kind of old school with the high socks and the mentality, running on and off the field.
Yep.
And it's kind of a cool thing to see. It's you know, for a rotation that has been really set for a couple of years, to see a new guy come in like that. And maybe he wasn't the top prospect, you know, but he forced the issue and came in late last season, and you know, now he's pitching well enough to stay. I mean, they really don't have anyone else, unless they go after Beattie down in the minors, but nobody at the major league level. So they really can't afford to lose another guy. And like you said, Bumgarner, if he doesn't come back till right after the All-Star break, And that's best case scenario, by the way. I mean, he has to have a rehab assignment. I talked to the trainer, Dave Greshner, and he probably won't start throwing or even picking up a ball till late May. So as you'll see with any rehab assignment, it's like the beginning of spring training, and it's a matter of throwing to hitters, and then a simulated game, and then a rehab assignment, an A-ball, and then a couple more in AAA. There might be a setback or two. And where's the velocity? Where's the timing? And spring training over 6 weeks with a healthy pitcher, you're only working yourself up to, seven innings. It's rare that you go 8-9 innings in the first week of the season, though you can't put anything past Bumgarner, except for the fact that dirt bike in Colorado, maybe you can put that past him.
Right.
That wasn't wise, and now we find out he's not invincible, and maybe he thought he was, and none of us are, but even the heroes. So
right.
it's a bad situation for the Giants. Noah Syndergaard, same thing with the Mets. Like your best player, your best pitcher, out for a couple of months, your team just is not the same. And with Bumgarner, I think it's kind of a humbling experience because he's never, ever been on the disabled list. He doesn't remember going back to high school having a sore arm. It's just not in his DNA. And it's not a baseball-related injury. It's a dirt bike-related injury. He fell. He fell on the shoulder. He bruised some ribs. And, you know, talking to the trainer, this is all a guess that he'll be okay after the All-Star break. And a month from now, maybe his shoulder will be okay, but maybe his ribs won't. Maybe his ribs are fine, but his shoulder is still bugging him, and it'll have to be pushed back. So you can't really rely on him for sure in mid-July, if that's the timetable, because it's really a guess at this point. And they weren't even sure if they were going to have surgery or not until they gathered and spoke and heard from a lot of doctors and, some really high-powered doctors who have had a history of, working with this kind of injuries, including the 49er doctor, Tim McAdams, and people with a track record of these injuries. And so they all kind of universally decided that no surgery was needed, just rehab. So we'll see.
We will see. You know, when it happened, we talked about how at least he was forthright. I mean, he didn't lie about it. He came right out. And do you think that sort of carried some weight with the Giants? I mean, that right away he just owned up to it, and rather than pull a Jeff Kent with the, remember when he had the truck washing story and all that. Do you think that maybe helped a little bit as far as just the image of what happened, and even with the fans too?
Absolutely. I mean, the Giants are probably still stinging from the Jeff Kent situation, which was way back in 2002. And it wasn't even during the season. I mean, it was spring training. And he really didn't need to miss any time. The Giants put him on the DL to begin the season. He only missed about 3 or 4 games. But he was bitter about that because he thought that was their punishment, that we'd just keep him out because you didn't tell us the truth, that you said you were washing your truck and you fell off the truck, but in actuality you're 2 miles from Scottsdale Stadium, popping wheelies on your motorcycle
right,
and fell.
Right.
And he tried to hide it, and he called some clubhouse guys, and they brought a white van over, and they picked him up through the motorcycle in the back. But there were witnesses, and there were 911 tapes, and Henry Schulman of the Chronicle went over and published those 911 tapes. And Jeff Kent didn't really appreciate it, but the truth came out, and Sabian was steamed. The Giants front office was upset. And that year, Kent and Bonds fought in the dugout, and he left at the end of the season, went to Houston. The Giants' offer wasn't as big as Houston's per year, and it was kind of, and then he became a Dodger, then he got booed. So that was kind of the beginning of the end for Jeff Kent. I mean, he had a great year. He had a wonderful year. He had a great postseason.
Yeah, they go to the World Series.
But that was the end of the line. That was his final year. He never wore the Giant uniform after the 0-2 season, after the World Series, except in spring training. They're in good graces now. He comes out every spring with his kids, and and puts a uniform on, and you know, everything swept under the rug. They're on good terms and everything, but the question had to be asked, what about this Bumgarner-Giants relationship? And they're talking about long-term deals and extensions, and you know, he's the best value in baseball. The money he gets versus who he is isn't even close. He should be getting Kershaw money, and you know, which is like triple of what he's getting, but he's not. Mm-hmm. And he was open to a new contract. The Giants were open. Who knows what's going to happen now when he's doing this stuff on an off day. But to his credit, Monday, the first day of the homestand, he sat in the dugout and answered every question.
Right.
And until there were no more questions. And, you know, from my experience, when I go over to cover football games or basketball games, and I hear the same in hockey, there are a lot of PR guys saying, okay, that's it, next question, last question.
Controlling it, right.
Yeah. But to the Giants' credit, to the PR staff's credit, they let him speak. I mean, these guys are grown men. They don't need PR guys saying last question, and you know, that's enough and all this nonsense. I mean, things have really changed in the business over the last few years. I mean, if they're bozo questions, if they're silly questions, then yeah, you know, get it, you know, end this thing. But if the beat writers are there asking questions, they're usually the most knowledgeable on the team. They try not to ask the silly things that maybe some of the guys who come in once a month trying to get a funny story and they're failing, you know. And I mean, there's no patience for that, especially if it's a news story and you're just looking for the facts and you're asking the questions to get the who and the why and the what and the where and the when and everything like that. So, you know, I kind of credited the PR department and Bumgarner for being a stand-up guy. And I asked him point blank. I said, listen, there were other athletes who might not have told the truth when in private they got hurt. You know, they could have said I was throwing a baseball on my off day and I got hurt. Or you know, you always hear these stories in the off season. You know, whether you believe them, who knows? But they happen in private and only family members are around, and you just have to believe them. Well, in this case, the Giants did believe it, and you know, Bumgarner could have told a different story, because only two relatives were with him in a remote area in Colorado. So anyway, the fact is the Giants believe he was telling the truth, and for that reason, Larry Bear said, we're not going to punish you. You know, he's meant a lot to the franchise, and what are they going to do, punish a guy who got him three rings and for making hardly anything compared to the best pitchers in the game? They're not going to do that. You know, they want this guy long-term, and if he's healthy, if he can show that he can overcome all the ribs and the shoulder, then you know, I'm sure they still would be interested in a longer term deal.
More with John Shea in just a moment. Jones goes back near the wall, shading the sun, and he dropped it. He lost the ball in the sun. Let's put the sun to good use at home with a SunPower residential solar system. Your SunPower elite dealer, SunFirst Solar, has a wide range of financing options, and they provide the finest customer service from start to finish, regardless of size or scope. SunFirst Solar offers the highest efficiency systems, newest technology, and the best warranty in the world. SunFirst Solar offers the most competitive price while not compromising on quality. This summer, let the sun heat your pool and eliminate your energy bill. Don't drop the ball. Call SunFirst Solar at 415-458-5870. That's 415-458-5870. And get your SunPower solar system today. Well, since we mentioned Jeff Kent, you wrote a story about the all-Giants-Dodgers team, so what we mean by that is you had every position and players who played for the Giants and the Dodgers, and you had Jeff Kent as a second baseman, and I agree with that. It's funny, though, because you think about a lot of these guys and the reaction of the fans when they come back, because Sergio Romo was just here, and of course, the fans, you know, loved him as a Giant. They gave him a nice ovation even as a Dodger when he, you know, first appeared. There are certain players that when they come back, they're going to have that adulation. There's no doubt about it. Jeff Kent was not one of those. When he came back with the Dodgers, I remember him getting booed. And, you know, part of it could have been that comment he made about the real estate here, how people in the Bay Area are stupid. I think he told Larry Kruger at KNBR that comment about, you know, people are stupid because they pay such high prices for real estate in the Bay Area. Well, that hurt him.
Before you go on, there were four people talking to Kent when he said that.
Okay, so it was just the audio
clip. Just for the record. We conducted this long interview, and then we put our pens and pencils and tape recorders off, and okay. We put everything. And, you know, one person had, it's still going, and everything. It's fine. But that quote, I mean, we were just kind of jawing with each other. We're talking after the interview. And so that kind of had some shelf life. It was fine. But to put it in context, I think that,
right.
That's, you know, we were talking about different things. And you know Kent, he's always kind of popping off about something.
Right.
But if anyone took that in a negative manner, I mean, what he said was true.
Right, it is true.
I mean, you pay more taxes here than Texas.
It is.
Houses cost more here than in Texas. So naturally, he lives in Texas. He's kind of a closet cowboy. He was born and raised in Southern California and played college ball at Cal. But anyway, he's one of the guys who did get booed. But a lot of these giant Dodger guys, you know, some people, you'd be amazed at some of the people who actually played on both teams. Juan Marichal played on both teams.
Wait a minute. Yeah, people forget about that. Or Duke Snyder.
He played two games with the Dodgers.
Yeah. not very long tenure, but Duke Snyder, I think a lot of people would forget he was a giant.
Yeah. Yeah, it was 1964, and he played center his entire life. I mean, songs were written about him, poems were written about him, you know, Willie, Mickey, and the Duke. And then he's one of the few, you know, great Brooklyn Dodgers who continued playing in L.A., but toward the end there, when he left the Dodgers, he played a year in San Francisco, but he didn't play center field because a guy named Mays was in center. So he played some left, he played some right, and he, you know, by then really wasn't the same player. But that's a Hall of Famer. I think there are three Hall of Famers. You correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was Gary Carter played with with both teams. And I'm talking San Francisco, L.A. I'm not going back to New York. And Duke Snyder.
Right.
And Juan Marichal.
Right, that's three of them, yeah. I mean, there were some other interesting names on there, like, you know, Jason Schmidt, we remember that. Daryl Strawberry, you know, he didn't have a long tenure in San Francisco, right? I mean,
right.
He's known as more of a Met. But Candy Maldonado, that one, I want to finish with him because I thought about him. He's on your list. He didn't make it as the right fielder. It was Reggie Smith, but according to you. But Candy Maldonado, the reason I thought about him is because of the lights that everybody's using, their cell phone lights, and that's caused a little bit of a disturbance. I don't know. Major League Baseball might look into that at AT&T Park. I mean, it seems like a fun little thing, but I thought of Candy when he lost the ball in the lights in the playoffs. And remember in St. Louis in 1987, there was that line drive to right, and he lost it in the lights, and it cost the Giants the game. And I wonder if Giants fans are looking for revenge and trying to get, you know, some right fielder to look at their cell phone lights and just lose it, you know, in a big game or something like that.
Yeah, and Major League Baseball is actually taking a look at that because, it started a couple of weeks ago, in the seventh inning with Brandon Belt at the plate, and a couple of guys did it, next section did, and all of a sudden the whole stadium is doing it, turning on their smartphones to the flashlight.
Yeah.
And it's like one of the, you know, Day on the Green in 1976 at the Coliseum with everyone with their lighters or whatever they were using back then.
Oh, yeah.
And in this case, I think the Giants are kind of hearing that it might not be a great thing if teams complain or if a hitter complains or it's a line drive to the third baseman and the guy in line in the stands is flashing his phone,
right,
and he gets boinked on the head. I mean, that could be a bad thing. So
it'd be dangerous. Yeah.
I think you might not see that last as long as the wave. Thank goodness.
Absolutely. John, thanks a lot for your time, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Have a good trip. I know you're going to Cincinnati and New York. Enjoy it.
Yeah, thanks, Joe.
That's John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. You can hear him throughout the season here on thesportsvirus.com. Join us again on Friday. We'll continue to talk about the Giants' road trip as they are in Cincinnati taking on the Reds. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening on thesportsvirus.com to Inside China Basin.